League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
People say I am the best boss.
You can find us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio and call in at 1-800-777-2907. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
We are back, and I'm so delighted to be sitting next to you, the Monday Night Delight, Carla Dawson.
The tired Carla Dawson.
Tired? Well, you stayed up late last night.
Yes, five hours and 17 minutes late.
What do you mean? What were you doing? I don't understand.
I had to watch those hometown Astros take care of the Dodgers. Woo!
It was a long but very, very exciting game.
And you stayed till the end too, right?
Well, of course I did.
Good answer.
And in this city, of course, there are a lot of tired people. I don't know if you saw on culturemap.com, there's a big write-up about how every employer needs to just understand that his or her employees are going to be a little foggy, a little sleepy today. If anyone gets caught with their head down at their desk, this is the one day it's actually okay.
Pass. Fair.
And the whole thing is that, well, we had that last night in the city of Houston. And, of course, some of us are bracing for Halloween, a big night, trick-or-treating, very exciting. Everyone wants to know. I've been getting tweets, calls, questions. They all want to know what will Carla Dawson wear as her Halloween costume?
Do I have to reveal this on air?
I wish you would.
Okay, I'll tell you. I am going to be bubblegum on a shoe.
Oh, please.
Yep. It's not what you expected.
Really?
There you go.
I might have thought Wonder Woman, something. Chris Tubbs, you're not satisfied with that answer, are you?
If you're the bubblegum on the shoe, who's the shoe? That's what I... That's
oh.
Now that is the million-dollar question.
Because is this a two-person costume or is this like a do-it-yourself? Because now I'm curious how you're going to pull this off.
This remains to be seen, boys.
All right,
just
we'll work on that.
Have to wait.
Listen, we've got a full slate of activity in sports. I might call this the zone of totality.
Wow.
Everything is happening. World Series, NFL, college, all of it taking place.
NBA. And
we'll cover it all. NBA. We're going to get to talk to Faye Vincent, former Major League Baseball commissioner, later this hour. And then next hour, we're going to get to speak to Ryan Leaf, a former San Diego Charger quarterback, Washington State quarterback standout. I would say that our plate is full. It's going to be a great Monday night, and we have a big Monday night football game going on. It's the Chiefs and the Broncos. We'll get live on-the-field updates during the course of the show as well.
Sounds good. Playing at Arrowhead is going to be tricky.
So you're listening to The Boss and the Gloss. We'll be right back. It's David and Carla on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Broadcasting live from a city that did not sleep last night, Houston, Texas, with a game that lasted 5 hours and 17 minutes. And Carla Dawson watched every one of the over 400 pitches. Did you not?
No. It was the type of thing. I couldn't take it.
Really?
I was an in-and-outer. I'm going to be honest about it. First game that I've ever done that with, actually.
So what does that mean, in-and-out? That means that you walked away, got some food, or you had another screen in front of you, like a computer screen? How are you
that
watching?
That means slammed off the TV in frustration. I could not take this last night. I was feeling very raw after the Texans-Seahawks game, and I just didn't have it in me to stomach the whole thing.
Okay, well, so you're showing your Houston roots, which is understandable.
We're broadcasting out of Houston, yes.
I have duly noted.
But, you know, I have California roots, too, so I'm you know, I'm an equal opportunity employer.
Sure. But the game, so the stats, actually, when you looked at that matchup and you saw there was Keuchel versus Kershaw, it was going to be a pitcher's duel, two aces.
Ace versus ace, right.
We're number one versus number one, and the stats just didn't bear that out.
No, I think I looked at them this morning, and I could kind of tell. I mean, both of them were polled early, but when you actually looked at the numbers – who would ever think that Keuchel, Dallas Keuchel, our ace, would last not even four innings, 3 2/3. And Clayton Kershaw, 4 2/3 innings. Keuchel had 3 earned runs, all in the first inning, and Kershaw had 6 earned runs. That is just not, I don't think, what anybody from either the Dodgers camp or the Astros camp expected. But at least they both had the same kind of night together.
Well, that they did. I will tell you that when the Dodgers jumped out to a 3-run lead with Kershaw on the mound, I figured this was going to be their night.
Yep.
And then they'd go back to L.A. with a 3-2 series. I mean, that's the mood I felt. And that must have been the mood throughout Minute Maid Park.
No, I think you're right. But, you know, you said just the perfect thing. When I saw that first inning where the Dodgers were up 4-0, I thought, wow, this is the Dodgers' night. I mean, we're going to have to give it to them. But then you saw this collection on the mound. It was the infield. It was Correa, Altuve, Bregman, and Gurriel met with Keuchel on the mound. And you know what they said? You heard this in Carlos Correa's post-game press conference. Was they just said, hey, we need to play loose. Like, come on. Let's have fun. Just that was their conference on the mound. Is just loosen up, guys. Like, we got this. This is, and look what had happened. I think it was that conference. It was also their desire to support their aces in Verlander, in Keuchel. They did the same for Morton. They do the same for McCullers. They really recognize as fielders that, you know what? These guys are out here touching the ball in every single play, like throwing their lights out. And they just want to do it for these guys, which is huge. I love that attitude.
Well, a lot of love on that team.
So much love.
So we were talking last week. Altuve expressed his love for Justin Verlander. It was in our He Said, She Said segment. That
he literally loves Justin Verlander.
As opposed to illiterally loving. I mean, that was literally loving. It's just fantastic. And then Verlander returned the favor.
Yes, he loved him right back.
So that was all good. That was last week. Now there's a whole lot more love going on.
Oh, my goodness. So when post-game, when Altuve is asked about Bregman, who had the beautiful walk-off single in the 10th inning, he said he loves that kid. In fact, he loves every guy on his team.
Well, so does that cheapen the love? I mean, that's the obvious question.
I think Verlander's been cheated on, yes. I think Altuve has many, many loves.
Verlander felt he was the first love.
Oh, he was the first love. We're going to give him that.
Okay.
We're going to give him
but
that.
But now he's one among many.
But, you know, Jose may be small in stature, but he has got plenty of love to go around. And it clearly goes around that clubhouse.
Well, it's fun. Last week we talked to Scrap Iron, Phil Garner, and talked about the chemistry on the team when he was with the Pirates,
right.
The We Are Family team, the team that had Willie Stargell and Dave Parker, and they were playing the We Are Family song in the locker room. You almost feel that the Astros have that vibe, that kind of a internal team connection.
Well, and you know what? When you have that kind of connection and you're having fun, good things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Remains to be seen. Game 6 tomorrow night.
So many stories. I mean, Altuve's been outstanding.
Oh, my goodness.
The guy that stood out to me, and maybe for a different reason than most, but Bregman obviously got the walk-off hit. We're all going to remember him for the walk-off hit. But his play at third, his plays at third, his defensive ability.
Throughout this series
through
and the
all
New
of the postseason,
mm-hmm.
his defensive play has really stood out to me.
No, it's been outstanding. And, you know, keep in mind, he is 23 years old. But the neat thing is, he's a second-round pick out of LSU. At LSU, he had been to the College World Series. I mean, he'd been on the biggest stage in college baseball, for sure. He is not afraid of this. He's got this youthful exuberance. And Carlos Correa said he's the most confident guy in this entire clubhouse. I mean, he's one of the youngest and carries the most confidence. And do you know that he is one of 8 players, 23 or younger, to hit multiple home runs in the same series? You know who he joins in that company?
Who?
Hank Aaron and Mickey Mantle. Those are some serious names.
Pretty big names.
And he's not afraid of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still humble about it, which I love. But his defense, as you pointed out, is stellar.
Yep.
Stellar.
He's really stepped up. He's obviously dialed in mentally.
And he was a converted third baseman. You know, he came to, he was a shortstop in college. And the Astros asked him to move to third base. So let's also recognize that he is a converted third baseman, honestly.
So look at that whole infield. It's just outstanding.
Wow.
And Altuve last night, the 3-run homer, sort of said, hey, we, the Astros, are not surrendering here. We're behind. Here we come back. I don't know if you could see what, but on the TV screen, Altuve's eyes get big when he's swinging the bat. It's almost like he's a kid excited to chance to hit that ball. And his eyes lit up. He hit it perfectly, and then the ball was knocked out of the park.
I think he is like a kid. I mean, he just gets so excited. And he should. If I played like him, I'd be excited too. You know, he and Correa combined to hit for 6 out of 10 with 7 RBIs on the night. Two people did that. But look at this, too. I love this. This is one of my favorite stats. I feel like I'm statting you out.
No, I love
this. Sorry. That the Astros are the first team in World Series history to have 5 different players hit home runs. Springer, Correa, Altuve, Gurriel, and McCann. Wow!
It's impressive.
Although there were 8 home runs in total. The Dodgers did their fair share of damage, too, last night.
Well, they did. And so credit the Dodgers.
Puig, Bellinger. Oh.
Wow. You know, with 5 outs to go, they're down by 3 runs, and they don't give up either. No quit there. This is an epic battle. You got 2 really, really good teams. And as you recall, we talked about this last week. I certainly saw the series going to 7 games. At this point, I think the Astros' best shot is the Astros in 6 is where you thought it would finish. Verlander on the mound in game 6 is probably the Astros' best shot.
I agree. And again, it comes down to that veteran leadership for me, too, because while Verlander is the veteran, this is his 17th trip to the postseason. You look at what McCann's veteran leadership has done behind the plate. You know, he controls that pitching staff. He calms down that pitching staff, as well as he has been absolutely stellar just patrolling home. I mean, he's really done a great job. And that's what Verlander brings also, that sense of veteran leadership, that calm, that experience. So we'll see. He's on the biggest stage in the biggest game tomorrow night.
And he'll be facing Hill, the counterpart for the Dodgers.
Rich Hill, right.
Who is
in Dodger Stadium.
In Dodger Stadium. I mean, this is going to be an exciting week for baseball.
It really is. I can't remember a series, well, since maybe the 90s, that has been this epic. Wow.
Well, the Dodgers come into the series with the biggest payroll by far. Astros sort of middle of the pack. And Astros a younger team as a group. I mean, they got all these young kids who come in and they haven't hit the big contract yet. So it's a little bit, has a little bit of a feel of the monster big mega team and the Dodgers.
David and Goliath,
sure. A little bit of a David and Goliath. At least that's the way it feels out of Houston, Texas.
No, I agree. And they have a bullpen just like New York Yankees that is enviable by many teams, including probably the Astros.
Well, to me, that's been perhaps the biggest surprise. Games 2 and 5, Astros did so much damage to the Dodgers' bullpen.
I think they broke through Kenley Jansen, which even in Saturday night's loss at Minute Maid Park, you know, when 9th inning, Alec Bregman hits a home run off of Kenley Jansen. While that did nothing to, I mean, it added one more run, but the Astros weren't going to win it. Again, it's another chink in Kenley Jansen's armor that they got me. They got me again. So it's really, it's chess match.
Exciting times. Ooh. And what's exciting next is we'll be talking to Faye Vincent, the former MLB commissioner, and we'll certainly ask him on his perspectives of the World Series. It's David and Carla, the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So joining us now on SB Nation Radio, former Major League Baseball Commissioner Faye Vincent. Faye, welcome into the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be with you.
So I get to do something with you that may mean nothing to anybody else, but I'm going to tell you that I am a fellow Purple Cow. I am a Williams College grad at class of 85.
Well, you must be a very bright person. We're also very fortunate. It was a good education.
For those who don't know, Faye Vincent is a Williams College alumnus. So welcome into the show. We have connected there. But first, I should also mention that we are broadcasting out of Houston, and there does happen to be a heck of a World Series taking place between the Astros and the Dodgers. What have you seen, and how do you feel about the Astros' prospects?
Well, I have to say they're ahead. That gives them a very big advantage in my book. The next 2 games are in California. That's a problem. They showed that. Houston did in the past. So I think home field advantage is underrated, but I think it's very real, and we've seen it this year. Look what the Yankees did. The Yankees were very tough at home. Houston's very good at home. So it's a good series, and it's good for baseball. I'm happy for both teams.
So, Faye, this year there are 6,105 total home runs hit by all the teams in the regular season, which is the most ever in a single year in Major League Baseball history. Last night in Game 5, we saw 8 between the Dodgers and the Astros. What do you think is causing this crazy record number of home runs?
Well, I think the, as they say, the home run hitters get paid millions, and the single hitters do not. That's Ralph Kiner's comment. Home run hitters drive Cadillacs, and single hitters drive Fords. You know, I think the fact of the matter is these guys are very big, they're very well trained, and they're trying to hit home runs. Secondly, look at the Houston ballpark. I don't mean to be insulting, but that is a small ballpark, and it was built to generate home runs, and sure enough, it does. I think the ballpark, look at Yankee Stadium, when Joe DiMaggio played right center field, I mean left center field was 400 and some feet, and it meant if you hit the ball to left center field, you were very likely not going to get a home run. So the ballparks have played a big role. I don't think it's the baseball. I don't think it's the bats. I think it's the players being rewarded for hitting home runs, and by God, they're good at it. And I think the ballparks have built for the owners, and the owners love, as the fans do, home runs.
We're talking to former Major League Baseball Commissioner Faye Vincent. Faye, postseason here, we've had a sweeping number of firings of managers, managers who actually had pretty good track records, won divisions, guys like John Farrell. Do you think the patience level is much thinner than it used to be?
Well, I think the American public, the demand for victory, for winning, is intense. John Farrell obviously came in and did very well. I think Girardi had one championship in 10 years. I thought his record was very good. I think both of them are gentlemen. I don't know either one of them closely, but, you know, look at Dusty Baker, whom I do know very well and respect and admire. It's a tough profession, and managing, you know one thing, when you get hired, you're going to get fired, and it's just the way it is. So these guys are big guys. They know they get paid very well, and although I'd like it to be a little more patient enterprise, it simply isn't, because the public rewards excellence, and it stays away if the teams don't do very well. So the owners are following the dollar, surprise, surprise, and the dollar says, if you don't win, get rid of the manager.
It's got 29 teams getting rid of their managers eventually, but you are so right. Faye, the evolving role of pitchers, which we are seeing, and we've really seen a taste of it in this postseason, with limited innings for starting pitchers, what do you think is going on? Can you speak to the evolving roles of these short starts for starters and using, you know, 6 and 7 pitchers in a night?
Well, I think it's Darwinian. I think that the game is evolving. I think it changes. Look, Warren Spahn, one of my great heroes, one of the great pitchers of all time, used to point out that he would never have gotten a chance to pitch into the 8th or 9th inning. He won a lot of games when he was behind going into the late innings. And that just doesn't happen anymore. If you are having trouble in the 4th or 5th inning, you're very likely going to be taken out. And the quality between the starting pitchers and the bullpen pitchers has narrowed. It used to be that the starting pitchers were the really great pitchers, and the bullpen pitchers were a notch below, maybe 2 notches below. That's changed. Some of these relief pitchers, like Chapman for the Yankees last year and Miller last year, the year before this for the Indians, those guys changed the game. They're closers, but they can pitch 2 innings. So now you have starting pitchers who are coming in relief, and you've got bullpen pitchers. I don't think the Houston bullpen is anywhere near as strong as they'd like it to be. And as a result, you've got people like Verlander who are coming in relief. It's like the Red Sox brought some of their great pitchers on in relief. And so I think the game has changed. I don't think starting pitching is ever going to be what it was. It's to get you to the 5th or 6th inning and then let the 2 or 3 guys in the bullpen take over. That's not going to change, and it's probably just a form of evolution in the game of baseball.
We're talking to Faye Vincent, former MLB commissioner. So one of the long-standing questions, I know that you confronted it as a commissioner, is the gap in budgets, the total payroll of big market teams and small market teams. Of course, in this World Series, we have the Dodgers who are at the top of the heap and the Astros who are somewhat in the middle of the pack in terms of spending. That question and the management of that question, the implementation of the luxury tax, how has that evolved and how do you think it's shaped up since you've been commissioner? Are you satisfied?
Well, I think... Your question is a good one, but it raises a different kind of answer from the one you expect. The economic wild card in sports is gambling. And when the Houston Rockets sold for $2 billion, that told you that the sports world expects the enormous revenue from legalized gambling to be flowing to baseball very shortly. You saw what the Nets, half of the Nets sold for some $2 billion the other day. Now, the Nets are really a bottom-level team. They've had a lot of failures. That price, by the way, which is $4 billion for the team, wouldn't include the Barclays Stadium. So what's happening is the owners, and you saw it in Miami when the price for the Marlins went at $1.2 billion to the group. The fact of the matter is gambling is coming to baseball, sadly, in my view. It's coming to all professional sports. The revenue is going to be enormous. The franchise owners are going to get billions of dollars of money that they haven't been getting. And buying a franchise today is a very good procedure because the value of the franchise is going nowhere but up.
That's so true. And Faye, since you left in 1992 as in your commissioner's post, what have you seen with the game of baseball? Do you think there's any changes that you need to see going forward? Like they're talking about pitch clocks, more offense. What would you change, if anything?
Well, the game last night ended at 12:30 in the East, and you know it started, I don't know, 4 hours earlier. I mean, it's. I think that the fans still own the game, and I think we're treating the fans very badly by letting pitching coaches go out to the mound every inning, letting catchers go out, talk to pitchers. The commercial time in between games is probably 3.5-4 minutes now. That's a lot of time. And it really delays the beauty and the wonderful aspect of baseball. So I think the economics are enormous. Baseball is generating huge amounts of money. But I think there has got to be room for making a more efficient. Look, it's entertainment, and it's like having a four-hour movie. When I was in the movie business, you didn't want a 3 or 4 hour movie because the public wouldn't go. And the movies all turn out to be about 120 minutes, and that's about right. So I think baseball and all sports have got to keep an eye on the fans, and I think that's something that should be changed and I think will be.
One of the wise men in baseball, that's former Major League Baseball Commissioner Faye Vincent. Faye, thank you so much for joining us here on SB Nation Radio.
Not at all. Thank you for having me.
You know, Carla, one of the things he jumped to was the valuations of the teams. Staggering numbers. Rockets here in Houston just are being sold to Tillman Fertitta for $2.2 billion, the Marlins' big price tag. Mm-hmm. And he says the reason is gambling. He says there's a vision out there that there will be legalized gambling, and that will create all kinds of new economic opportunity for these teams and create basically the next wave of appreciation of the team values. Because I will tell you that from my perspective, I've heard that argument, but from my perspective, when I look at what people are paying for teams today, I wonder, where's the upside?
Where is the upside? Right? Have we hit a ceiling?
There aren't any more seats to sell, and ticket prices are already egregious. It's hard for the common man to get into the stadium anyway. Mm-hmm. So where's the upside on a team value? Oh, you can argue TV rights, and to be sure they could go up. But I think his argument is that when gambling becomes legalized, it will create all kinds of more viewership. People will be more engaged in sports because now gambling is being...
They're invested in it.
And with increased viewership, more economic opportunity, more team valuation.
Jeez.
The last question there would really be, is it just that there'll be more interest and therefore more viewership and therefore more sponsor sales? Or will the teams actually go and chase the opportunity to be the marketplace for gambling? And that would cross a path that none of the franchises have ever done. Sure. None of the leagues have ever gone there. They've always tried to keep their distance from gambling. But I think he's saying that line may get blurred.
About to be crossed or get blurry. Yeah, that's probably right. Do you think in the near future?
Well, I think that a lot of folks believe that legalized gambling is in about 2 to 3 years away.
Wow.
We'll be right back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. We'll talk about some NFL trades when we return.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, it's an exciting night for many reasons, not the least of which we get to announce two trades in the NFL. There are not many trades in the NFL, but two coming down the trading deadline coming up on Tuesday. And we can announce the first one. Jimmy Garoppolo has been traded from the New England Patriots to the San Francisco 49ers for a second-round draft pick.
Unbelievable. You can knock me over with a feather right now.
That is a stunner.
Because who is next on the depth chart? We've got Brady. There was Garoppolo. Brissett is now with Indy. Who's next? Chris, who's next?
Well, they've got nobody, so they'll have to find somebody off the back. Dare I say Colin Kaepernick? I don't see Kaepernick going along with the Patriots and Belichick, but there's some guy out there. There's some body on the scrap
journeyman,
heap. There's a journeyman type they're going to have to pick up as a backup.
Because I don't think they're going to wait for this draft, the 2018 draft coming up, the college draft. I don't think there's anyone that they're going to be interested in. And honestly, with a 40-year-old quarterback who's already been sacked over 22 times this season, you can't wait. You can't have that luxury. They got to bring someone in.
Well, so one question is, who will be a backup on the Patriots? And then another, we got to look at what this means for the 49ers. But while we have Christian Vetter in the in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium. Christian, do you have an update on the Broncos and the Chiefs?
Yeah, we're in the first quarter. Chiefs and Broncos, Monday Night Football. The Broncos 3-3, Chiefs 5-2. Right now, Broncos with the ball at their own 27-yard line on their first possession. They go 3-and-out. C.J. Anderson, a 4-yard run. Trevor Siemian, a couple incomplete passes. The Chiefs come up with a big punt return, a 36-yard punt return by Tyreek Hill. That's called back. Kelsey with a 19-yard catch on their first possession, but they punted away. And now the Broncos with the ball. And no score between the Chiefs and Broncos. Just 10:49 left here in the first quarter.
That's Christian Vetter, our man on the ground at Arrowhead. And we'll come back to the Broncos' offense. Looks like it's continuing to struggle. Mm-hmm. But to the trade, Garoppolo to the 49ers for a second-round pick. It leaves the Patriots with no backup. Mm-hmm. Brady better stay healthy. And he's taken a lot of hits this year.
He really has. Wow.
For the 49ers, right now, they are on track to have one of the top 2 or 3 picks in the draft. They, of course, are winless thus far.
49ers and the Cleveland Browns, the only two winless teams.
So the 49ers were in line to get Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or whomever sort of emerges from the top of the pecking order of college football. But they didn't want to wait, or they wanted somebody who'd been trained up. I mean, look, Garoppolo at least has had several years in Belichick's system. He's started a couple games, but he's certainly not proven.
No, there's not enough body of work on him. Because he's a backup to Brady, you don't see him. You really don't see him. So I think it's a bit of a risky move, but you're right. He's been in the Belichick system, and if they want someone that's proven, there we go, because they've got C.J. Beathard, and you know he's a new rookie this year, and he doesn't have anyone to speak of with Brian Hoyer being benched for leadership. So maybe that's what they're thinking.
So what it means, the 49ers get their quarterback now, and they get it for a second-round pick, not using the top of the pick. I mean, so that's interesting. And the 49ers then would still have a top 2 or 3 pick, depending on where they finish the season, and they can lever that for somebody else. So they pick up Garoppolo. Garoppolo steps in there. The Patriots pick up what will likely be one of the top picks in the second round, which may be pretty good value for Garoppolo. I mean, the Patriots drafted Garoppolo, I believe, in the third round. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to get maybe the top pick in the second. So effectively, they've gotten currency out of Garoppolo. The other thing, well, for the Patriots is Garoppolo's contract ends this year. Mm-hmm. So he was going to be a free agent.
He's going to have to get paid big, which is not what they usually
do. They really couldn't afford to pay him and pay Brady. They wouldn't have had both on the roster next year. I guess there's a statement here that the Patriots believe that over the next 2 to 3 seasons, they're still going to have Tom Brady as the starting quarterback, mm-hmm. and therefore they can let go of this guy who might have been the heir apparent, but the timing is off.
The timing is off, and it's interesting with the Patriots. I think their vulnerability comes in the fact that they have the number one ranked offense in the NFL and the worst ranked defense in the NFL. So that really, while Tom Brady, we've seen it over and over and over again, and I would never bet against that guy, they are vulnerable with the defense like they are and the injuries that they have. So they are going to have to add pieces on that side of the ball. So, yeah, they really have a lot of faith in him. So it's wow.
So a big trade, Garoppolo to the 49ers for a second-round pick. And while we have a moment, we've got a caller coming in. This is Richard from West Virginia, who I think has developed a bit of a sweet leg for Carla Dawson. Richard, welcome to the show.
What have I developed for Carla Dawson?
A bit of a sweet leg, a crush.
Oh, okay. Is she married?
Well, she has a man friend.
Oh, well, that's a shame. No, that's okay. I mean, I'm eligible. I'll ask her out on a date right now.
Well, I don't know if
she... Richard, I'm blushing. That's all I can say.
She's flattered.
Well, I'm glad. I don't know. You've never seen me, so you don't really know.
Well, I mean, on personality, Richard. I don't worry about the visual.
I'm 5 foot. Well, no, I'm not 5 foot five by 5 foot five. I'm not that big. I only weigh 170 pounds, so I'm not that big.
Are you?
You know sports, so maybe. Well, but you said you had a man friend, right?
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you that I'm not going to give you my height nor my weight. So.
Oh.
It's a one-sided deal here, Richard. That's for sure.
Well, okay. I don't mind that kind of stuff. I did have a woman one time. She weighed 190 pounds, and I was getting on the stale on the back where she was, and she pushed me out of the way and got on there, and she weighed 190 pounds. She could care less. I mean, she's got a nice-looking face, but, I mean, the body, just it isn't going to happen. She would just she'd make a train go down the dirt road as far as her body is. It's not that good-looking.
True confessions here tonight.
I called to ask out on a date. I just I called to find out. Actually, we're talking about Tom Brady and the Patriots. But something like that, even though can I ask about what I wanted to ask about instead of going that way, or do you want me to go that way?
You know, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Brady and the Patriots.
Okay. When it comes to that, something I would love to see, I mean, it's just my dream, just my ultimate dream is to see Tom Brady be traded to the Cleveland Browns. And see how great he is, just to see with the coach that they have, if the quarterback would make a difference there. I mean, that is just my all-time wish to have something like that. Tom Brady just says, I've done enough, all I need here. Let me go to another team and see if I can do any better. And I bet he wouldn't. Even as great as he is, I think Bill Belichick is the key. I think without Bill Belichick, Tom Brady wouldn't be anything like he has, but... Gee, would I like to find out. I really would.
Well, you know, Richard.
I'm just pushing in one hand, you know, pooping in the other, and I'm not going to win anywhere there, but I'd love to see it because I think those two have the greatest marriage there is. They just complement each other, and I just think that's it. But I think if Tom Brady went to some other place, even like the Cleveland Browns, the worst team ever, that I don't think he'd be putting up near the numbers that he's putting up now.
All right, well, thanks for the call, Richard. It does raise that question. Did Belichick make Brady or Brady make Belichick? Obviously, there's something symbiotic there.
Absolutely.
But it's been a long-standing sort of question. I mean, Belichick's done well with other quarterbacks.
Belichick's done well with all kinds of pieces that mm-hmm. are not – he makes them big names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chris Hogan. Who was Chris Hogan before? You know, he's a lacrosse player, and he makes big names out of – smaller names or lesser known names, I should say. But you know what's interesting to note, too, is the importance of the quarterback, which I think Belichick, obviously his system does well for quarterbacks, and he knows how to develop quarterbacks. But you look at the two teams in the league that have zero wins, and that is the 49ers and the Cleveland Browns, and both of them are a disaster at the quarterback position. So you absolutely have to have that. You cannot do, and we've talked about this before, you can have a game manager in college if you have all the other pieces, like Alabama used to do. But you cannot do that in the NFL. You don't have a quarterback, you got a big zero. I mean, those two teams have zeros.
Well, the 49ers have just paid a price to get their quarterback. The second-round pick of the 49ers next year going to the Patriots for Jimmy Garoppolo. That's trade number one in the NFL today. The other one, I don't think is as much a surprise, but the Texans have traded their tackle, Dwayne Brown, to the Seahawks. And given the rough season, the rough relationship between Dwayne Brown and the Texans, no big surprise. Dwayne was a holdout this year. He was under contract, did not report. And then he did report and had all kinds of negative comments about Bob McNair after McNair's comment at the NFL meeting. The writing was on the wall. Dwayne Brown was going to leave the Texans.
Absolutely. And, you know, he'd only been a Texan. He'd agreed to come back about 5 days before all of this started. You know, with that whole mess with McNair's comments was not good, but the Texans handled it with class. Yes, these players were upset. Some of them walked out of practice. They had team meetings. They met with Bob McNair. But in a true Texans way, it was handled in-house in the locker room away from people like you and me in the media. And Dwayne Brown took it to the media and was very vocal about it. And I don't like the way he handled it. I understand his points and what he's saying. That's not where I'm coming from. I'm coming from, you have not been a team player, Dwayne, since OTAs, since preseason, since the first six games of the season. So why now do you feel you can come in and then just be the cancer, you know, for this team right now? That is not what they need. He's a fantastic player. He kept himself in great shape. He showed it yesterday. We need him in the left tackle position, definitely on the line, but we don't need what comes with it.
Well, I think that's the conclusion of the Texans, is they shipped him to the Seahawks for a cornerback, Jeremy Lane, and a draft selection still to be determined. Seattle is in dire need of a tackle. They lost George Fant to a torn ACL in mid-August. So they pick up Dwayne Brown, who can come in and probably play pretty quickly.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
For
a guy who sat out, he looked pretty good and was able to play pretty well last week.
Yeah, he kept himself in shape, so I give him that. I mean, I think he still has years for him, for sure. But what I don't love with Dwayne Brown, and I really like him and as a player, and up until this week, I've really liked what he represents as a person, but he's the 12th highest paid offensive lineman in the league. I don't think he's one of the top 12. I think he's in the top 15 to 20. He is way up there. So what I'm saying is that he was very fairly compensated. I think his issue was with the amount that was guaranteed because he had that devastating injury 2 seasons ago and was able to come back from it. But that's the deal he agreed to. And he was able to have his deal redone, and he's making nice money. And the team's been, what I feel, has been good to him. It's a tricky situation. So I'm disappointed that it ended this way. But I think, you know, I wish him the best of luck in Seattle, and I welcome Jeremy Lane to Houston, and let's go.
Texans can use some cornerback help as well.
Absolutely. Kevin Johnson coming back from missing a couple weeks. They look like they're a few steps slow. He really showed up yesterday against that Legion of Boom in Seattle.
So very interesting times. You know, one observation, the NFL doesn't have a trading deadline with the same sort of fervor as the baseball trading deadline.
They're not the NBA trading deadline.
Or the NBA trading deadline. Right. Yet it does seem in the last couple of years there have been more trades than you've gotten other years. Well, the Patriots traded Collins at the deadline, I guess, a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. And now, look, with Garoppolo and Brown going, there may be other players out there. You know, there were whispers that perhaps, Eli Manning would be traded.
Right?
Larry Fitzgerald of the Cardinals. Fitzgerald is a guy.
A staple for Arizona.
Staple. They'd hate to let him go. Hate to let him go. But the Cardinals are going nowhere with Carson Palmer injured. Maybe you let Fitzgerald go and finish his career with a winning team.
You know, I think what we're seeing this year, we talked a lot about parity, the P word, but it looks like we're looking at league-wide mediocrity. When you look at kind of zero undefeated teams, 2 winless teams, the other 29 are with 2 or 3 losses. There is not a lot of difference. It's really interesting. So mediocrity, parity, I'm not sure what you want to call it.
All right, 2 big trades are headlines in the NFL to this evening. And when we come back, we'll give you an update on the Monday Night Football game. This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
a first hour.
I mean, we are just not, we are not boring here.
Well,
we are pre-Halloweening.
It all started when we realized what you would be for Halloween. And I want you to rethink that. So I'll give you another chance at that question later on. We want to know what Carla Dawson will be for Halloween trick-or-treating tomorrow night. It was also a night when we learned that Richard from West Virginia has a crush on Carla. Well, congratulations. I'm very happy for both of you.
Thank you so much. I'm glad that I am 5'6 by 5'6.
Yes.
I match up nice with the 5'5 by 5'5. I don't know.
I know that you and Jose Altuve are the same height.
That's exactly
how
right.
I think of you
That's
whenever
right.
I think of Jose.
That's right.
Meanwhile, at Arrowhead Stadium, the Kansas City Chiefs have taken a 13-0 lead. It is a deep pass from Alex Smith to Kearse in the end zone. So the Chiefs jump out ahead. Kelce, at the tight end position. And the Chiefs are ahead. The Broncos continue to struggle.
They really do. This game is really going to set the tone for the second part of the season in the AFC West, murderer's row. But poor Denver. Three touchdowns in the last four games. They have got to do something about that offense. And that O-line needs to start protecting their quarterback and giving some holes for these running backs. Jeez.
Well, yes, Simeon has not looked like the same guy that he was earlier in the season.
No. And C.J. Anderson's not getting, you know, not getting any protection either to do anything. But Von Miller has 80 and a half sacks for his career. So let's see. Let's see what happens for him tonight.
Well, he's been awesome. Julius Peppers also had a milestone this week for the Panthers.
Right.
Another great sack
leader.
It was
sack lunch in the NFL this week. My gosh. Everyone's going down.
Everyone's going down.
That means that the O-lines are not doing their jobs.
And Tom Brady cannot go down anymore because Jimmy Garoppolo has been traded. The other big news of the day, Garoppolo going to the 49ers for a second-round draft pick. And Dwayne Brown going to the Seahawks. So fun NFL draft talk or NFL trade here at the deadline. That's the first hour in the books. You've been listening to The Boss and the Gloss, David and Carla on SB Nation Radio.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.